We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Flybee newsletter read by Zeb Soans.
Treat a loved one to air travel from £29.99. One way.
Our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Samira Ahmed. And opposite them on my left, Phil Jupitus and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, who's helping victims of flooding by dipping into a new pool of money?
Oh, Her Majesty's Government. It started with the Somerset Levels, which is Michael Gove's new underwater exam, so that children are able to be examined while holding their breath for 3 hours and recalling the kings and queens of England in order, memorised by rote. And all sorts of positive things have come out of it, like all the community spirit. There is no problem with money. He said, you can have what you want. What do you want? Go on, buy yourself something nice. Go on, smarten yourself up. Get out of them wellies, girl. You look a mess. Get a nice frock. Here you go. Have a monkey. Go on. So he's out dispensing largesse around the country. The deficit is no problem. The economy is doing well. We're a rich country, so that's good to know. The army's been out. They turned up without wellies, which is ironic because when they were sent to Iraq, I think wellies was pretty much all they had. But it's been a good week because the word inundated has been used properly for the first time in many decades. Bad week for Lord Smith, Chris Smith, who in many ways is a very honourable man. He was the first out gay MP. No doubt many UKIP supporters in the Thames Valley think that is the reason for these floods.
I'm always a little bemused because I first heard about climate change, its possible effects, when I was about 16. It's like 35 years ago I was given this information. And I've always sort of held it close to me, which is why I've always lived in flats or properties 60 feet above sea level. I've always clung to that. Just live somewhere high because apparently the place is melting. Now, the word floodplain to me, if you buy your house on a floodplain, that's like buying a cottage on a volcano. Is there some sort of extreme estate agent that specialises only in the most hazardous dwellings? We've got a lovely little two up, two down on a floating iceberg. Buy quickly, because it's melting and there's a polar bear.
I was travelling a lot this week and Virgin Trains tweeted during the whole shebacle, abandon all travel. And it didn't specifically refer anyone to Virgin Trains. They were just saying to the whole of the British Islands, abandon all travel! Just throw yourself off the bus. And then, of course, you get the whole thing, as Jeremy was talking about, which is the allegations that we have caused, we being the gay people. Yeah. And on behalf of myself and Martina Navratilova, I can only apologise. What I'd like to reassure people is that if gay people had a superpower, it would not be to control the weather.
Do you know
it
what,
would be
though?
Something far more fabulous than that.
Or at least the clouds would have glitter in them, but...
You people should be...
You
should be out there. Because
you
are practical, you have to admit.
Yes.
And the Somerset Levels definitely need dykes at this moment.
Prime Minister said, oh, we're going to throw money at it. I thought, no, I am practical. Sandbags would be so much better. I have to say that, you know... was he called David Sylvester, the UKIP councillor, who very first blamed flooding on gay marriage? I think he must actually be a happy man, though, because every single child in Somerset has now been baptised. So this is a this is a good thing forward. Any good things about the flood? Any plus
Yes,
sides?
Watching you canoe to Broadcasting House in an acorn cup. Because Radio 4 listeners will be unaware that Susan and Sandy are borrowers. So if anything goes missing during the recording...
Do you know, I like a bobbin.
Is that what they're calling it these days?
I think the one thing that's... It's not funny. How many BBC presenters we can see being buffeted by 100-mile-an-hour winds at the coast to tell us just how windy it is? I mean, in the old days, they would just say... It's windy. We don't need to see a person clinging onto a fence whilst three dogs and a shack go past them before we finally go, do you know what? I think I finally believe the BBC.
They're going to have to start employing just bulkier weather people. Really, they're just going to have to get a weatherman with a nice low centre of gravity.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister has said that money is no object as flood relief efforts continue in Oxfordshire, Surrey, Somerset and along the Thames. They also announced that 600 troops have been deployed in flood-hit areas. The troops will be invaluable, having spent the last 10 years preparing in the arid deserts of the Middle East. People in Surrey have no power, which is the first time that's ever happened. 2 points to Jeremy. Samira, why is the argument for Scottish independence losing currency?
All three main political parties have agreed on the idea that Scotland can't have the pound and be independent. Mm. And the response from the SNP has been that this is the kind of English establishment, the kind of Oxbridge public school, all ganging up on Scotland and saying they can't have it. But no one accepts Scottish pounds in England anyway, do they?
Oh, honestly, if you give a Scottish pound in an English shop, you look like you've drawn on a napkin.
You know, the economy has been identified by all the surveys as the key issue in the independence debate. So that's why this is such an important story. The difficulty is, I think, that George Osborne going up to Edinburgh to speak about currency is as welcome as Jack the Ripper doing a keynote speech at a conference on feminism. It's really... No one's particularly delighted by it. But it's difficult to have any clarity because we don't know what's going to happen between the parties. But it's an important day because it's the first time they've come out and made a statement about it, I have to say.
But some of the stuff is silly. Salmon has threatened Scotland could walk away from its debt. Walk to where? We're joined up. I don't know if he's noticed. Somebody in Newcastle could wander across and take it back from the Edinburgh Mill in cardigans. I mean, really...
Salmon is a very, very determined man. I could see him getting some diggers and cutting Scotland off along Hadrian's Wall and then popping an outboard on it and just sailing it somewhere warmer. We'll stop here. It's the Giant's Causeway. It's lovely.
Sorry, what accent was that you were doing?
You're going to start on me? You're going to start on me? You're going to start on me now, Frodo?
Oh, you can just feel the love.
There was this thing, it said Scotland didn't meet the criteria for joining the EU. It's some sort of, they didn't meet this sort of standard. And I just imagine that they were given a form, and it's the question is, are you Greece?
What is the criteria, though? Do we know what the...
What are the criteria, Sandy? So you come here, you come over here with your giraffe-slaughtering ways... You can't even learn the language.
Can I just say, it makes a hell of a barbecue. So 5 extra points to Phil there.
Because the thing is that there's a good deal of revenue comes in from Scotland. It's billions. And if Scotland goes independent, that revenue won't be coming in anymore. And so I would imagine that the good people at Amazon and Starbucks are cacking themselves because if we can't get it from Scotland, we're going to come knocking on their door. I'm afraid that back tax, we're going to be needing it. How much revenue did Scotland bring in? Come on.
Maybe. It sounds like the expert on everything.
Well, you know, it is quite difficult. I feel like I'm meant to know everything and have answers to everything regarding this particular thing. I'm just a woman standing in front of an audience asking them to love her. That is all I am doing.
George Osborne has said that a vote for Scottish independence would mean it walking away from the pound. Sounds like we've only got one left. This came after the Treasury published details of the costs and benefits of potential monetary union between Scotland and the remaining UK. George Osborne said that the pound wasn't like a CD collection that could be split after a breakup, prompting boos from the Yes campaign, cheers from the No campaign, and cries of get an iPod, Grandad, from everyone else. Part of the Treasury's argument is that the UK would be more able to bail out a failed Scottish bank than an independent Scotland could bail out a failed British bank, which in fiscal terms is called asymmetrical risk, and in simple terms is called we're not falling for that again. 2 points to Samira. Phil, why was it a good week to drown good news?
Our good friends in the government, they're smuggling news out, basically saying now because the fluding, and that's what I call it, it's proper pronunciation. The fluding is really rampant. And so what the Conservatives are doing is they are taking news that does not suit their agenda and drowning it like a sack of kittens.
Oh. Now, in fairness, they're just leaving their press releases on riverbanks.
Why did you have to talk about drowning sacks of kittens? You know I have 3 cat children.
You did?
You did, yeah. So what was the story that was buried?
So it was that financially, the European Union is actually quite a good idea. It's actually of benefit for us. And the weird thing is that Cameron is pro-Europe, but his base, he don't like it at all. So he's in this odd kind of position of suppressing news that would support an argument he wants to make to them, is that remaining in Europe would be good for the country.
It was great in the papers, because the papers each reported this in their own different ways. The FT reported that the EU was a positive influence. The Guardian chastised the government for hiding the information. And the Daily Mail did a special report on Princess Beatrice's face.
Apparently EasyJet would not exist without the European Union.
Well, neither would Ryanair, which is another compelling argument.
If I could, I don't mean to stand up for EasyJet, but I'm going to, because I flew with EasyJet and I don't like flying, so I'd taken a lot of drugs, prescription, and I cried the whole, I was sobbing, and the lovely stewardess from EasyJet held my hand for the first hour and then she gagged me, but to be fair, no. They're very nice. I flew an airline to Dublin recently though, one of the twin prop planes, and I was crying again. But it was so balanced, the plane, that you weren't allowed to go to the toilet until someone had replaced you. It was... So you had to go and watch, go to the toilet, and the stewardess would go, you, at the back, fatty, up here.
What were you doing in a prop plane? Were you in a black and white film?
No, they have them. They,
really?
They use Ryanair has them. Yeah. I went to Manx Airlines once. That's the one without a tail. No, I went on... I flew. I shouldn't have done it. It was only to Liverpool, but I flew to Liverpool on Manx Airlines. And just before takeoff, I needed to use the loo, and they let you, because it was like such a sort of ad hoc plane. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I was going to go to the loo, but all the food for the flight seems to be in a box on top of the lavatory. And the stewardess went, shh.
So, Samira, tell me, do you think that the government are hiding anything else? I mean, they're keeping this report very quiet. Do you think they're hiding anything else? Well, it's a common tactic, isn't it?
I mean, there's a lot of number manipulation going on. I don't know about other stories. I still think it's interesting that with flooding in general, they're still cutting jobs at the Environment Agency, even while they're saying they're spending more money.
Yeah, I have to say, though, at least, you know, Cameron is putting the floods to some use. Ed Miliband, honestly, he just seems to be standing around. He looks like a surveyor stuck in a swimming pool. The government has ordered a low-key release for 8 Whitehall studies on the EU that suggests the single market has bolstered trade, created wealth and brought benefits throughout the country for fear of provoking another row with anti-Brussels MPs. The Conservatives denied any attempt to hide the report, saying they would be released when they are ready. They're currently trying to dry 7 of them on a radiator. 8 is in the airing cupboard. Do you remember airing cupboards? They were a rather nice thing, weren't they?
I've still got one.
Have you?
I've got an airing cupboard.
I love the idea of, it's in the airing cupboard. Oh, that'll be nice.
What is this Alan Bennett-like free associative whimsy you're coming out with? Oh, you know what I like? Weaving. Oh, the feel of the shuttle in your hand.
OK, this is really awkward, Phil, because do you know what takes up half my study? A loom. It is. I have a study that overlooks the sea. My children called it my loom with a view. Labour MP Mike Gait.
What do you make on it?
what I make on it?
What do you make on your
loom? Oh, I make lovely things. I can make rugs. I can make you a lovely tie, for example.
You could make me a tie on a loom.
Yes, no, a weaving. Well, you're a wide gentleman.
Have you reached the top threads? Do you climb up it like a little Danish spider?
Can you weave me some swimming trunks? Because the ones that my nan knitted for me are still full of krill from the 1960s.
I know I referred to you as wide. I was trying to be polite. I was in John Lewis this week trying to buy some trousers, and there was a woman serving who was she was charming. She had challenging English. And I said to her, "Do you have these trousers in a larger size?" And she said, "But surely they would fit you. They are really huge." And they didn't, and I... The Thames isn't rising. I'm still crying. 2 points to Phil. Susan, who's having to take their medicine when it comes to privacy?
Oh, this is an exciting story. This is about data protection. And it's very interesting because I used to specialise in data protection. I know, I'm a whiz at parties.
Sorry, was it like stand-up about data protection? Was that your big thing?
Do you know, I have done stand-up about it.
Wow.
It wasn't the most successful show I've ever done, where I asked people what they thought about the Data Protection Act. No one came, but, you know, the information was there if people wanted it.
Five stars. What PC? I couldn't stop watching Macworld.
GPs, the Royal College of GPs, is concerned about a new project by which they're going to upload GP records and hospital records to a large super server in a Skynet way, Terminator fans. So all of the information will be accessible. And the problem is it's going to be accessible not just by health professionals, but by others. And this is where the key and really quite sexy concept of informed consent comes in. Hang on to your hat. So what informed consent is, it's more than... So you can consent to something, but you don't really consent to it if you're not informed what you're consenting to. So, for example, Phil, if you buy tickets to see Kylie Minogue, you arrive and find out it's actually Kylie Minogue's number one Scottish tribute act, Susan Kalman, you wouldn't really have consented to watching the beauty that would occur. I'm spinning around. Question is, do any of us really know who's going to have access to it? They say they're going to anonymise it to a certain extent, but you might still be able to tell who it is. So all of our GP records will go up into this large server, our hospital records, apparently to improve efficiency. But there could be people who are researchers, who knows if it'll be sold on. We all know that it's not very secure, these computerised things.
But surely the answer is, if we don't want these things, that is a crazy idea, but maybe GPs could write their records out in a handwriting that's only legible to them.
I've got it. Right, what you do is, you have the cloud up there, but you have to create an avatar of yourself, and you can defend yourself by fighting off people that are trying to come to you and get your health in. We call it World of Healthcraft.
I really like that. And would you know that you weren't well by bits of you not working so well when you were fighting?
I am a 10th level asthmatic with the power of fire.
Informed consent thing.
Yes,
okay. So, I didn't even know about this.
Yes,
okay.
Well, if it's sensitive personal data, it's a higher level of consent if you're going to use the information than just consent. So, we should have more information about what they're doing with it than anything else because it's all about our health. So, for example, my prescription for Valium for flying and for fun. I might not want people to, you know, if I was going for like a job on Top Gear and they found out I was on Valium, they might not give me the job because then how could I drive the super fast cars if I was on Valium? And I want that job, Phil. I want to be on Top Gear, Phil. That is my dream. I want to be on Top Gear going, "This is a big car. Do you like it?" No.
The whole focus of this GP's information is set it up that you have to opt out rather than opt in, so it makes it much easier in principle for them to take your information and therefore sell it on privacy.
But I didn't even know about it. Apparently they've sent out a leaflet to every household. They already know where we live.
Well, apparently David Davis said his big concern was they could identify him because you could tell he'd had his nose broken five times.
Well, yes, and what if you say, you know, oh, there's somebody on our list who's got a big wart on his face and a broken leg, and you think, oh, I wonder if it's Warty Bob next door. Do you know what I mean? The Royal College of GPs is pushing for a postponement in plans to roll out a new national NHS database until the public has been better informed following criticism of the scheme by several charities. The scheme will see confidential records for all patients uploaded into a national database unless individuals opt out, which can be done by phone, email, or texting unsubscribe to Jeremy Hunt. Intimate details about patients' medication, weight and blood pressure would not be freely available to the public, said Nigel Mathers of the Royal College of GPs, 6 foot one, 75 kilos, BMI of 23. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Samir have got 4 points, but so too have Phil and Susan. We start round two with an offer from Go Groupie.
Save 55% on today's deal for this soft closed toilet seat. Includes bottom fixings.
Our thanks to Jean Kendall for sending us that. Jeremy, whose invitations have left Obama rouge-faced?
Oh, Obama's been quite weird, because President Hollande went to France and Obama was trying to sort of make clear that despite the fact that relations have got quite rosy with France and it looks a bit like France is his favourite, he wants to make clear that he loves Britain and France equally. But his analogy was, he said, I have two daughters and they're both gorgeous and I love them both. And then you're thinking, well, which daughter are we then? Is Britain the sort of daughter who's always been very obedient to America, but is a little bit boring and you know that we're never really going to achieve independence? Whereas France is the daughter who's much more charismatic and a lot of fun to be around, but you know she's going to go massively off the rails at some point. And that you're going to be driving around trying to find her at 2 o'clock in the morning because she's gone off with a biker gang.
Does this mean he's going to buy us a dog?
Oh, yeah, can we have a puppy? But what, I mean, it was a really strange, and his daughters must have been thinking, what are you talking about, you weirdo?
Well, I was also thinking, has Obama never read King Lear?
Yeah.
But at least it wasn't sort of, I mean, I can imagine Francois Hollande thinking, you know, choosing between your wife and your mistress, and one is Britain and one is France, and you think one of them has got better croissants.
Well, and certainly saying I love you both equally didn't work for Hollande last month. I mean, that was...
It's absolutely untrue to say that you love all of your children equally. I have no children, but I am a child of someone. If you have children, you do love one of them more than the others. Now, if you are a child thinking, it's not me, you're right, because you know if you're the favourite, because it's usually the youngest, the cutest, the one that's on Radio 4. Hi, Mum and Dad. One of them is always. That's a stupid...
No, that's not true. I've got three children, and I say to all of them, you're my favourite, don't tell the others.
Yeah, but which one would you save in a fire? Come on, be honest.
Do you know what's so tragic is my children treat me like I'm some kind of saga outing, and they would save me. That's the truth.
It's embarrassing for Hollande, though, now, because no one quite knows what his relationship status is. So when he goes to places, you know, there isn't a first lady in it, so they just sort of say, I'll just give him a plus one and he can always bring a mate if he can't find anyone.
Was it say on Facebook?
What?
I don't know. Is he on Facebook? Le livre I mean, de la visage?
Knowing him, relationship status.
It can't be good. He couldn't even get a date for a US state dinner with Barack Obama as his wingman. I mean, the man is really in trouble, isn't he? He was by himself, wasn't he, for the whole
yeah,
thing?
Yeah.
The weird thing was, Obama at this banquet, not him personally, but they served 12 different kinds of potato.
I mean, count them off for us, Sandy. Come on, let's go.
No, but
this is like porn to me.
The
go.
Real question...
Now, if it had been the tea shock, that would have been entirely appropriate, wouldn't it? And he gave him the 12 times a potato, and he says, chips.
Duchess?
It's the potatoes. I saw them on the television. They were like a thing of wonder where you get the pastry, the
Lyonnaise.
Shoe pastry.
Lyonnaise.
With mashed potato, and you deep fry. So it's shoe pastry and mashed potato deep fried. I mean, if I could make that myself, I would just stuff every...
French fries.
Sorry.
Croquettes.
Mashed.
Have you done just plain boiled?
Potato bread.
Boiled. Yes.
Fried.
Potato bread.
Oh,
waffles. Potato waffles.
Chips are fried.
No, no, it goes in a circle. It goes in a circle.
That's Duchess.
Ash browns.
No, there's another one.
I can't believe we're trying to work out 12.
Oh, sweet potatoes.
Baked. No, that's
sweet potatoes.
The one that you really love when you mix it with potato and celeriac.
Cannon, isn't that?
Cannon. Smash with veg in it, and that is the enemy.
Oh. Okay, so plain potato. How many have you got?
No wonder they cancelled veg talk.
You've not got Duchess potatoes.
What's Duchess potatoes?
Is Duchess not the ones they used to do in the 70s?
Hello.
Yeah, it used to be. Yeah, you would.
Croquet, we've done croquet.
I can't believe we're doing this. Well,
hash browns.
Hash browns.
I
said hash browns.
Yeah.
This is like Radio 4, Play Your Cards Right. Start here or lower.
Oh, wait, what about rusty potatoes?
That's a camera.
Rusty is very good.
We got 12!
Oh, God, I suddenly had a terrible longing for spud you like. Do you remember that?
Do you know, my husband remembers that they had a potato salad topping in spud you like.
Yeah. How about that?
That's why I like that Man versus Food, because in America you get sandwiches where macaroni cheese is a garnish.
Anyway,
there used to be a shop in Brixton called Mr. Cheap Potato.
No.
And it sold cheap potatoes, and it was had an E on the end, which was always very sweet, and now it's a hipster coffee bar.
Back to the news. Foray through the world of potatoes. 300 invitations to a White House state dinner for François Hollande had to be discreetly destroyed as they made reference to the former First Lady. They were destroyed so discreetly that this story only made the pages of every newspaper in the world. The state meal consisted of caviar, quail, eggs, steak, and in honour of Mr. Hollande's new relationship status, a Tesco microwavable ready meal for one. Dinner marked a renewed closeness between France and the USA, but Obama denied France is America's new BFF, or in French, bouf. 2 points to Monsieur Hardy. Samira, which daddies will no longer be able to puff?
Oh.
Do you see what I've done there?
I do. That was a very hip reference.
Thank you. I might give myself a point.
You do. MPs have backed a ban on smoking in cars where there are children. Although, of course, they haven't thought about the unintended consequence of how much more nose-picking will be going on in cars. But you could have conditions like, we won't smoke in the car, but you don't get to have the Wheels on the Bus CD on again.
Oh, yes, yes!
And the other alternative, of course, is to allow them to keep smoking, but put all the children on satins.
Oh, that's very good, yeah.
Or the roof rack.
You do that anyway, Jeremy.
Apparently, 300,000 children in the UK visit a GP each year because of the effects of secondhand smoke, which must be really stressful for them. Thank goodness they smoke. I mean, it's a terrible thing. Did you read about that 10-year-old boy in Norway? It's the most wonderful story, right? 10-year-old boy in Norway. He got up very early in the morning, he put his 18-month-old sister in the car, and he drove his parents' car to head to his grandparents. He managed to get 10 miles away, and then he unfortunately went into a ditch. And when the police found him, he claimed to be a dwarf who'd forgotten his driving licence. My favourite story of the
That's
week.
That's the kind of ingenuity that young people should really develop from an early age.
I thought that maybe he was going to get his sister to take the points and had a future in politics.
As a rule of thumb, if you're thinking to yourselves, you know, should I be smoking in the car with the kids? If when you drop the kids off at school, they smell like kippers, you're smoking too much.
Do you know what you could offer instead? I was at dinner the other night and I got offered snuff.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you take it?
Well, I thought, as I don't drink and have never smoked, the potential embarrassment of sort of sneezing snuff all over the Provost of Oriel College was probably greater than the potential joy of trying it out.
Is it making a comeback now?
Well, apparently you can't have cigars with the port, so all that's left is snuff. And so they hand it around and, yeah.
Do you know, I make it a rule never to sniff anything offered to me by a stranger, and it stood me in good stead. Apart from that one incident where I woke up in Paris, but, yeah.
Have you tried the white snuff? Boy, I get irritable. What's that all about? But I have to say...
I've told you, Phil.
It's Moorish.
It's... It's not snuff, it's talc. I've told you this.
Is that why you put it on my bottom?
How many Radio 4 shows do you do, Phil? I'm just interested.
Again, we're back with that.
I'll shut all the best ones down. Veg Talk's dead now.
Dry book. MPs have backed calls for a ban on smoking in cars in England and Wales when children are passengers. The Royal College of Physicians has stated that 160,000 children a year feel the adverse effects of secondhand smoking, but it has yet to clarify how many feel the positive effects. Simon Clark, director of smokers' lobby group Forest, said smoking in cars with children was inconsiderate and then waded into the flooding debate by declaring Somerset a bit moist. I'm going to go back to injecting heroin when I drive. There we are. Way forward. 2 points to Samira. Susan, who went up his ivory tower to denounce hunting?
Yes, this is a story about the Prince of William. And he sounds more like a pub if I say it that, so more familiar to me. So the Prince of William got into a bit of bother. He was part of a campaign to stop people from hunting endangered species, and that is not things like Scottish Conservative MPs. That's genuine endangered species. The problem was the weekend before he did this, he had been hunting. Now, we are assured that he was not hunting endangered species. He was only hunting things like
poor people!
He was hunting stags, not the stags you find in Newcastle, obviously, on a Friday night. Do you know, I was in Newcastle once, Phil, and I saw the saddest thing I've ever seen. I saw a man dressed as a pot of Coleman's mustard. And he was sitting on the pavement crying. Now, I think he was part of a stag weekend where they'd all decided to dress as condiment. And he'd lost them somewhere. And I just thought, that's that somewhere in Newcastle, there's someone dressed as ketchup shouting, Brian! So, the problem was, he'd been hunting the weekend before. Now, people said, oh, it's a bit of a shame, it's a bit unfortunate and stuff. The only thing I can think of, because that is a bit silly to hunt and then do this thing about hunting, is that maybe he hasn't got a diary. Like, I've got an electronic diary that I upload and I can see everything that's happened. Maybe he's got an old file of facts and he just looks at a day at a time. Maybe he got a big desk diary from the Reader's Digest, right? And he just goes, oh, what am I doing today? That's Prince William, by the way. Oh, what am I doing today? Oh, I'm going hunting in Spain. Oh, blimey.
That's really good, Susan. That's really accurate.
Actually,
that's
top
Prince
notch.
William. That is.
Really,
yeah.
Really.
Oh, blimey. What's going on here, then?
It's like that's... you're in the room, Susan.
Kate, where's the baby?
Listen, I'm available.
Were you the dialect coach on the Peaky Blinders, by the way?
He went hunting, then he said, don't go hunting, and it's not the best thing. If you're going to try and do a statement kind of thing like that, don't try not and do the
but
thing
to,
that you are doing.
To be fair, what he was hunting, I mean, you know, he was hunting deer and bull, and what I've understood from it is he is trying to wean himself off shooting animals entirely, and deer and boar are like the e-cigarette of hunting. I think that's the...
I quite like the idea that, you know, he's picked up on this and people say, well, you said you're anti-hunting 1 week and then the next week you're shooting boar. Hey, I'm going to be king, screw you.
Yeah. The thing I learned from the thing is in China, the way to impress your guests, apparently, is to serve powdered rhino horn after dinner.
Yeah.
No, I've got to up my game.
Like snuff.
Well, I don't know. I'm still on Angel Delight.
They have a rhino who's brought to the table and you get one of those little Parmesan hand graters. And you have to hold it, if you look at it in the eyes and hold the horn firmly and look authoritative, it'll keep still.
Say that again, slowly. look me in the eyes. Hold the horn firmly.
You can do that, you've got no grip at all, have
no.
you?
Didn't they kill, he and his brother killed 700 partridges?
700, on a single day, they shot 740 partridges on a single day, and most shockingly, didn't eat any of the pears that fell out of the tree. So.
But you know, the biggest question for me is, I wonder if a single journalist dared ask him at that big conference taking place about the fact that he'd been hunting, and did he see any kind of hypocrisy?
Well, I liked it that the Environment Secretary, Owen Paterson, warned that if leaders didn't act, history will not forgive us. And I thought, yeah, there's a rescue dinghy's already sailed for you, mate. Prince William and Prince Charles have attended a summit on the illegal wildlife trade hosted by the UK government just days after William went on a hunting trip to Spain. William said he wanted to preserve endangered species so his children could enjoy Africa as his ancestors had done, through the telescopic lens of a rifle. Phil, who didn't stick their neck out to save one of their animals?
I get the Danish giraffe slaughtering story.
I didn't want to do this story, okay?
Of course you didn't want to do this story. No, you didn't want to do this story because your people...
Look, can I just say, I have lived in Denmark most of my life. I grew up there and then I keep going back there. I have a house there. I've never heard of us having a giraffe surplus. Can I just say... If you don't have it on the posters, Denmark, Land of Herring, Lego, too many giraffes, it's not...
Was it not the Danish equivalent of them filming Animal Magic, crossed with Saw?
So let's say the Danish zoo animal expert man does sound like Alan Bennett, an old Danish man. He said, well, it's educational for the children to see, you know, a giraffe being slaughtered and fed to lions. Like they would in the wild. What, by Danish blokes?
The
with
thing is,
knives.
They couldn't justify the cost of keeping him alive without breeding, and that's obviously a problem of running a zoo with giraffes too high overheads.
That argument that they put forward, that it's good for children to face the grim realities of human existence, you think, oh, no, just that mindset is just... I think give children a bit of a breather before you introduce them to the horrors of the world. You don't have to say, actually, you know, your guinea pig, she's not living with Jesus because Jesus doesn't like rodents and guinea pigs don't have souls. She was buried in the garden, but the foxes dug her up and regurgitated her innards on the patio. That's what happened. That's what life is.
Seeing a giraffe killed and fed to other animals would prepare me in any way for my girlfriend running off with my best friend, for eating so much Viennetta that I was physically sick upon myself one Friday night, and the sudden and creeping realisation that death is all I have to look forward to. I don't think seeing a giraffe killed in front of me would help me through any of those things. I think it was wrong, I think it was Danish, and I don't agree with it.
But, you know, after watching that, being able to joint a chicken would be so much simpler.
Well, that's true. And if any of us get called upon at any point to have to carve a giraffe, if you get invited to some giraffe roast...
But the whole thing was about...
Sandy, I just need to stop you there. The giraffe had a name. Can
Marius.
We just give it that respect?
Marius, OK.
Marius, please call it by its name.
All right, but the zoo... The zoo did argue that contraceptives were not a viable alternative for Marius, and I think that's fair because, you know, you imagine an animal with hooves trying to put on a condom. That is undignified, is what I think.
Could they not have got Prince William involved in some kind of gesture?
Well,
I thought you were a peace-loving people, Sandy.
Well, I can't take responsibility for this.
They put their old people on wooden boats and set fire to them, that's right.
For Danish children, because I saw them all, they were really close. So the giraffe's being hacked up, right? And this guy's going, oh, this is the neck. That's Danish. You're welcome. This is the neck. Yeah. And the kids are like really close. They're all going, yeah, whatever.
I will be honest, if you had to imagine what a Danish version of Sesame Street was like, it's a bit like that, really.
The thing that people are getting all aerated about is that two zoos offered it a gig to come and be their giraffe.
One was Doncaster, and they did give the giraffe the option.
It was the Yorkshire Wildlife Park near Doncaster. And they offered to rehouse Marius, but the Danes declined because Marius's brother has superior genetic material and he already lives there, which is, you know, the same reason Ed Miliband can never visit the United States. Copenhagen Zoo has come under fire this week for killing a healthy giraffe due to an apparent surplus and then publicly butchering it before feeding it to lions. The zoo denied they had treated the animal badly, saying it had had a good life, barring, you know, the last few seconds. Concerned that the animal might breed, contraception has been raised as a possibility, but rejected as giraffes are notoriously forgetful, unreliable, and most are Roman Catholic. Copenhagen Zoo admitted killing the animal on Saturday, but it will still take Danish police and Sara Lund another 30 days to solve it. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
Sandy, this was sent in by Michael Laurie, and it's from Times Letters. It's about sex workers, and in the letter it says, "Sex work is a diverse profession with many points of entry."
Ms. Ahmed.
This is sent in from Ted Newcomen in Chestertown, Maryland, in the United States, and it's from a local paper, the Kent County News. It's an advert. New Year's resolutions. 1. Lose 15 pounds. 2. Stop smoking. 3. Play with the kids more. 4. Lower blood pressure. 5. Plan my funeral.
Mr. Jupitus.
This has been sent in by Carol Linden of Ryslip from a copy of Metro. Metro, the newspaper clogging up tube tunnels. It's an advert for the gig. The Leicester Square Theatre presents Joan Collins' internationally acclaimed one-woman show, One Night with Joan, 2nd to 9th of February.
Ms. Gelman.
This has been sent in by Barry Webster, and it's a quote from Eric Pickles on being appointed Flood Defence Minister. I think we recognise now that we should have dredged, and I think it's important now we get on with the process of getting people back into their houses and really do some serious pumping.
Let's take a look at the final score. Phil and Susan have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Samira with 13. Before we leave you, here is an advertisement for a Valentine's meal deal sent in by Emma Barber.
Valentine's Day, 14th of February. Four-course meal, £27.50. Complimentary glass of bubbly for tables of four or more.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Jeremy Hardy, Samira Ahmed, Phil Jupitus and Susan Kalman. In the chair with Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair's script was written by Roderick Crooks, Jack Bernhardt and Andy Walton, with additional material by Helen Zaltzman, Gronje Maguire and James Budd. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.